On April 22, 1828, Nicholas I called into existence the Greek Unii College at St. Petersburg, soon to be a mere tool of the Holy Synod for the thorough Russification of the Uniite Catholics. It was a state bureau operating under the name of the now traitorous hierarchy of the Ruthenians, and destined to accomplish in one short decade the plan of Catherine II. In that time, it excluded the Ruthenian clergy, secular and regular, from all control of ecclesiastical education, installed lay agents and Protestants in control of ecclesiastical affairs, imposed its arbitrary decisions on the monastic houses in matters of eternal government and discipline, kept vacant with set purpose episcopal sees or filled them with aged, weak, or morally unfit appointees, confiscated repeatedly the wealth of the monastic houses and suppressed the multitude of them. After the Polish insurrection of 1830, many thousand of Polish children were deported to Russia. All communication with Rome was strictly forbidden. The most severe penalties inflicted on any who converted a Russian subject to Catholicism. Russian legislation on mixed marriages extended to Poland, with the obligation of bringing up in schism all children of such marriages. At the same time, no Catholic priest could legally perform such mixed marriages. Many Catholic parishes were suppressed by the renewal of an old law of Catherine to the effect that no parish could consist of less than 100 families. Catholic priests of the Latin Rite were strictly forbidden to administer the sacraments to Greek Uniites, and no community of worship was henceforth tolerated between the two rites. Schismatic Russian sees were established in old Ruthenian suppressed sees. Many churches taken from the Catholics, even in Warsaw, and a total uniform of rite established in 1834 between Greek Uniites and the state church. In all these measures, and many others, Shimesko was the right-hand and willing tool of Nicholas. He had been made the bishop of the Lithuanian Uniites in 1830 by the Tsar, and accepted by Gregory XVI, who was, of course, unaware that for 3 years he had been maturing the evil plan which he was to pursue, step by step, until his death in 1868, and for whose final completion he was to leave behind him others of the same breed. Thus, in 1831, he became president of the Greek Uniite College or Bureau. He ordered the withdrawal of the usual missals, rituals, and breviaries of the Uniite clergy, and replaced them by similar works printed at Moscow by the Synod, but of course, without the commemoration of the Pope in the Mass or the recitation of the Filioque in the Creed. Any priest who refused to comply was punished by internment in some prison convent of Russia, or even by exile to Serbia, while his wife and children were taken from him and inscribed on the registers of the state church. The ancient Catholic cathedrals of the Uniites were transformed externally and internally into Russian churches. The nomination of its pastors was taken from the Uniite church and confided to the provincial governors, who placed in these offices vicious and corrupt men, and removed every worthy and independent shepherd. A wretched subterfuge of Catherine was refurbished in order to withdraw many churches from the Uniites. If it appeared from the parish register that the church had been founded by Russian Greeks, or had in any time belonged to them, the church was adjured to the dominant religion. Similarly, a handful of malicious or disgruntled parishioners could hand over their church to the state bishop and fix the stigma of legal apostasy on the faithful majority. Conversions to the state church were paid for at ruble per head. Schroeder, the Protestant governor of Wepsbek, received from Nicholas 33,000 rubles for as many Uniite souls converted to the emperor's religion. Ukas upon ukas, treason upon treason, violence and hypocrisy, and quick seceding act marked this decade of sorrow and humiliation. Byzantinism and Slavophilism had so worked upon the soul of the Tsar that he came to be, as if it were, eaten by a subtle and fierce mysticism of proselytism unequaled in the history of mankind. Nicholas surpassed even Catherine, and interpreted her decrees in a more odious sense than she intended. Every Uniite priest had to choose between the state religion, imprisonment, the galleys, or the mines. It was a mercy when only their families were ruined. Shimesko's own father refused to apostatize and reproached his son for his criminal deeds. He owed it only to his advanced age that he was not deported to Serbia. Bohawk, the aged metropolitan of the Uniates, refused to associate himself with these measures, and heroically bore the reproaches and menaces of the government which awaited impatiently the close of a life that yet withheld the consummation of the Ruthenian apostasy. His funeral, at least, was conducted according to the schismatic rite, and he was laid away among the Russian metropolitans in the cemetery of St. Alexander Nevsky. Thereupon took place the formal renunciation of the Ruthenian allegiance to the Holy See and the incorporation with the Russian Church of the Uniates of Lithuania and the Ukraine. The official Gazette of St. Petersburg published on February 12, 1839, the decree of a synod held by Shemesko with his creatures, the Bishop of Brezhnevik and the Bishop of White Russia, in which the three Judases proclaimed null and void the Union of 1595, and requested the Tsar to permit their return and that of their flocks to the church of their fathers. This monumentous step was followed quickly by a series of imperial decrees and corresponding acts of Shemesko and his fellow traitors that consummated the quasi-total abolition of Roman unity in Russia. The event was celebrated with public rejoicing. The Russian press proclaimed the extinction of a barbarous superstition, and protested beforehand against the judgment of history. It insisted on the peaceful nature of a triumph of persuasion and the overflowing joy of all the new converts at their restoration to the church of their origin, their native tongue, and their former faith. A medal was struck with the devise, separated through hatred in 1595, reunited through love in 1839. It was in vain that Gregory XVI protested in an allocution on November 22nd. The Tsar no longer feared or needed him. In the Pope's unhappy letter to the Polish bishops in 1832, on the morrow of the insurrection, the Russian autocracy had secured from Rome all that then seemed desirable and had seemingly exhausted the latter's power of retaliation. Secure against revolution at home, foremost in war and diplomacy abroad, striding with rapidity on the roads of India and Constantinople, the new Byzantium seemed really on the point of presenting to the astonished eyes of the Western barbarians another Justinian who should scourge their lawlessness, abate their pretensions, and recast human society on the lines laid down by the Holy Synod, or rather by the dark and cruel spirits who work through that horrid puppet.